Great. Well, good afternoon, and thank you everyone for coming here to the CXO Summit. It's really great to be here and have the opportunity to have so many discussions throughout the week. And you know, I really think the opportunities for all of us in this room to transform our businesses going forward, in particular using the cloud, are really infinite. And I thought I'd just spend a little bit of time today talking about some of that potential. You know, the cloud really enables you to kind of combine software and data together to really create true intelligence and really enable every one of you to build solutions that can literally change the lives of every one of your customers and every aspect of your business. And what I'll do is just tell you a little bit about what I mean and walk through a couple fun stories about some of the customers that have done it. You know, if you think back, you know, once upon a time, all the world's data was analog. You know, books, tapes, gramophone records, papers. We had about 2.6 exabytes of total data in the world in 1986. And then the 1990s happened. CDs came out, DVDs followed, and the client-server computing era. And this graph shows you kind of the approximate split between the different types of the data, and you can see kind of that volume of data that exploded. And then the internet came, and digital data exploded again, and very quickly overtook analog. And the data on these connected devices grew. You know, data now had an IP address. It was now connected data. And if you look at where we are today, the vast majority of the world's data is now digital. There's about 10 zettabytes of it, which is about 10 million petabytes, if you've heard of a petabyte. And if you took all that data and burned it onto DVDs and stacked them up, you could basically stack them from here to the moon and back 1,250 times. That's a lot of DVDs. But you know, the majority of this data isn't on stacked DVDs, but rather it's in the web and increasingly in the cloud, which is obviously way more convenient. And what about the future? You know, if you look by 2020, there'll be about 50 zettabytes of data. That's 20,000 times more data than was all the data in the world just 25 years ago. And you know, most of this data is going to live and reside in the cloud. And the cloud is really going to be the thing that enables you to combine this data with software to create truly intelligent apps. And this is really going to revolutionize literally every industry out there, including some ones you wouldn't expect, like this one. You know, let me tell you a story about connected cows. And you heard me right. There is such a thing as cloud-connected cows now in the world. It's a story with all the buzzwords of today. It's got the Internet of Things, it's got cloud services, it's got data, it's got analytics. It's kind of a sexy story. But it's also a story of kind of down-to-earth, simple innovations that using technology that can revolutionize even some of the oldest industries in the world, such as farming. So these are the connected cows that we're talking about. Notice the thing on their legs. No, it's not an Apple Watch. It's a pedometer, and it's connected to Wi-Fi. And they're sending data from these pedometers into Microsoft's Azure Cloud Center about the number of steps each cow is taking every day and constantly. Every step from every cow in the dairy farm is now basically being counted. And it's being built by Fujitsu, and their system's called Gyoho, which is Japanese for cow step. And it's the service in the cloud for dairy farmers. I'm going to answer this question in just a minute. First, let's go ahead and do, before I give you the answer, let's take a step back. You know, these days, pretty much every company is a data company, including all of you in the room. All your companies are data companies. And, you know, even the ones you wouldn't expect, even dairy farms. And farms have all the kind of constraints of a typical business. Their output is milk and beef. They need to maximize their output under the constraints of fixed assets that they already have, the cow herd, the pasture, the facilities. And they need to reduce their loss due to disease and maximize the efficiency of farm labor, which, by the way, turns out to be the most expensive element of a dairy farm. And the dairy farmer can basically do a couple of things to optimize this. You know, first, he can prevent the loss of animals due to disease, you know, detect early, vaccinate, and so on. And secondly, to maximize output, you know, she or he can basically maximize calf production by the accurate detection of what's called estrus. And if you remember high school biology, estrus is the scientific word for when an animal goes into heat and is ready to mate, being in the mood, so to speak, when the magic's ready to happen. But how can a farmer detect when the time is right for hundreds of cows in their herd? And to basically see how important accurate estrus detection is, let's look at some data from a research paper. You know, these days with artificial insemination, cattle conception rate is typically around 70%. But only if you accurately detect when estrus happens does that actually work. And when you multiply kind of these two numbers together, which is, you know, at 55% estrus detection rate, which by normal methods is pretty good, you get a 39% probability of calf production. And at a 95% detection rate, you get 67% conception rate, which is a 66% improvement over the baseline. Estrus detection, though, only lasts about 12 to 18 hours. And like in the most case of most mammals, it turns out to be mostly between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. in the morning, when the hardworking farmer and his farmhands have other things to do as well. So how can you use technology to basically monitor the dairy and figure out that optimum time and calculate a heat map of the dairy, if you will, in terms of when artificial insemination would be ideal? And here's where human ingenuity kind of came in. A farmer in Japan basically asked our partner Fujitsu to help them solve this problem. Fujitsu consulted a university researcher, and based on a bunch of ingenious research that had already been published by then, they came up with this clever detection system, something that was indeed 95% accurate for the detection of estrus. We like to say it's the hottest system for detecting heat. And basically, the way it works is this system that they built, which is a cloud-based IoT service using advanced analytics. And it's all built on top of Microsoft Azure. You know, they basically step count the data from the pedometers on each cow, and they send it over Wi-Fi into the cloud, and then basically they analyze the data using machine learning, and they basically produce alerts for the farmer on their mobile phone when they detect that a cow is going into estrus. And you don't want to see the emoji icon for that. And it turns out there's a sort of a secret way that's not that hard to detect when the cow is in heat. And it's basically, I'll show you with a graph. This x-axis here is the time of night. The y-axis is the number of steps the cow is taking. The lower line here is the number of steps on a normal night for our sample cow. The upper line here is the number of steps when the cow goes into estrus. And so it's actually fairly easy to calculate exactly when the cow is in estrus and when the optimum time is to do calf production. And you can see the normal number of steps goes way up. And it turns out this signal is about 95% accurate for the detection of heat, especially in a controlled environment such as the dairy farm. And you know, basically, from the point those steps increase, the optimum time for insemination is about 16 hours from there. And you know, that's basically when you could say AI meets AI. And what Fujitsu's researchers discovered looking at the data was even more interesting, which is another amazing thing, which is there's a window of fertility around the optimum time for insemination. And if you inseminate on the first half of the window, you're likely to get a female calf. And if you inseminate on the second half of the window, you're likely to get a male calf with about 70% probability. And the farmer now has sort of an amazing system at their disposal. Basically, they just need a cell phone. Any phone would work. And then depending on the mix of cows and bulls they have in their farm, they can basically control their breeding strategy. And on average, you know, farmers using the system basically are able to increase their calf production by up to 31%. And this translates into significant increases in their revenue. And they found, in addition to kind of not only optimizing cattle production, they could also use this exact same technique to detect over 8 different unique cow diseases using associated different step patterns. And so they can now provide better veterinary results and basically extend the lives of their cows much more significantly. And I remember if I said it's 95% accurate, you might ask, what's that 5% false positive rate in detection? You know, that actually turns out to be important too. It's not actually a sign typically of estrus. It's a sign that the cow has actually jumped over the fence and is running away, which turns out to be important to detect as well. And you know, a service like this you know, would not have been possible without the Internet of Things, without some of the improvements that are happening with advanced analytics and data, and would not have been possible without the cloud. And you know, combined, they really turn every company into a data company, and you know, really enable you to change your business in radical ways, even like a dairy farmer. You know, so you know, how do you build apps like this? You know, what are the key ingredients that you need to kind of transform your business in this type of way? And there's a couple different things that we're building in particular that sort of enable these types of scenarios. And I chose the Fujitsu example with cow production because it's sort of one that probably most people have never heard of, and it's sort of out there. But you know, you could literally hear it and see similar examples, whether it's in manufacturing, whether it's in retail optimization, whether it's in customer churn rates for telcos, whether it's in oil production, or transportation, or quality of service of elevators, or a whole bunch more. You know, we're literally working now with hundreds of companies around the world that are building massive systems very similar to this with all the same core primitives, and are similarly seeing kind of massive transformations in their business. And the way we're doing that is first with our cloud infrastructure, with something we call Azure, which is our cloud computing platform that really enables you to build any type of solution out there. And then we've also built with Azure something we call our Cortana Analytics Suite that runs in Azure and runs as part of it, which basically allows you to take data of any form, whether it's structured or unstructured, whether it's coming from your SAP system or whether it's coming from your click logs from your websites, and basically ingest it, analyze it, and be able to use it to kind of detect, you know, ask questions like, what happened to my business in the last day? You know, why did it happen? And then where we kind of typically see more companies increasingly leaning into, like the Fujitsu dairy farm, is really starting to ask the questions of both what will happen, and then really importantly, what should I do? And how do I take that insight and really turn it into intelligent action? And actually drive behavior that's going to fundamentally move the needle in terms of my revenue or lowering my costs. And again, you can apply it literally to every industry out there. And you know, we now have a whole bunch of services, in particular in the data space, that really enable you to do that. You're going to see, I think, Amir Netz, either today or tomorrow, is going to do a demo of our new Power BI service, which is a way that you can take a lot of the raw data capabilities and machine learning insights and visualize it in a way that every one of your employees can basically instantly see what's happening with their business and be able to drill down and ask questions. We've got machine learning services that enable you to basically look at data and look for anomalies and patterns. And machine learning is one of these kind of buzzwords that, you know, I think everyone knows they should be doing, and everyone's kind of like, I have no idea what in the world that really means. But it really is at the fundamental level basically looking at statistical analysis of data you already have to be able to get insights and be able to see things like this elevator is likely to break down because it's starting to show more vibrations than it did before, or this aircraft is going to be late because of the weather pattern system you know, in the southeast of the United States is showing turbulence and they're going to be 7 minutes late in arriving to the airport. Those are both use cases that we have customers using Azure to solve today. And then the beauty with machine learning is being able to, again, take action based on that insight and be able to use the rest of our cloud platform to be able to build systems that drive behavior in a rich way. Again, it allows you to translate and change things in a deep way. And we have a whole bunch of other data services here that, again, allows you to work with any type of data, store any amount of data, and be able to get deep meaning from it. In addition to providing kind of our core data platform, we're also looking at how do we take these same types of insights and integrate them within our own tools as well. With our Office 365 service, for example, we're taking machine learning and we're improving things like spam detection, but also increasingly looking for phishing attacks and actually analyzing attachments and or behavior of emails being sent to your employees and being able to use machine learning to better detect this is likely a hacker that's trying to infect malware on their PC. How can we actually analyze the attachment before we deliver it and be able to tell your IT administrator if an attack is actually happening? With our CRM product that's coming out this fall, we're integrating things like lead scoring directly into the CRM tool so that you can actually just as a sales rep or as a sales manager How can you actually just look at the CRM leads that you have open and have the system be able to prioritize based on a variety of different factors, which are the customers you should call today based on their proclivity to actually close this quarter? And having that, again, just be built into the tool so it just drives human behavior. And you'll see us kind of increasingly added with things like Windows and elsewhere and integrating this dynamic capability as well. And then the beauty is you can use this core platform to build literally any type of system like you saw with the dairy farmer and take advantage of it. One of the nice things about all the cloud services we're building, and I think makes us very unique, is the fact that we're actually running them all over the world. This map here shows the little blue circles represent Azure data center regions, which are basically clustered of data centers where you can deploy your code and where you can store your data. And you can see here, we've got lots of little blue dots here all over the map. We've got 24 Azure regions now all over the world. Put in perspective, that's more than AWS and Google Cloud combined. And in particular, we have promises around data sovereignty so that you can, if you're an Australian company, you know your data will never leave Australia. Or if you're a European company, you know that your data will never leave Europe. And you can basically meet the strictest style compliance requirements and or data sovereignty needs. And each of these blue dots basically looks something like this, and they're all slightly different. This gives you an example of kind of what one of our regions in the US looks like. That little circle there in the bottom right is a big truck. And you can sort of see the scale of one of these data center regions in relation to that truck. Put it in perspective, this is a different angle. You can actually see the expansion of the data center region that we're building out over the next 6 months. That's 2 miles long. And basically, it will triple our capacity in this particular region. And we now have millions of servers running all over the world. And the beauty is you and your businesses can basically take advantage of those servers anywhere you want and be able to spin up capacity in seconds anywhere you need it. And that ability to kind of do massive number crunching or massive simulations, be able to look at data over and over again to get insights that you just couldn't do in a traditional data center environment, really unlocks tremendous opportunity, again, to understand your business in a much deeper way. One of the things we find that's sort of interesting from a capacity perspective is we can actually tell now how the bond market is doing and how the stock market's doing, because so many of our customers now are financial customers doing risk analysis, and they basically run massive Monte Carlo simulations overnight, understanding where their hedge funds or where their portfolio is and what do they need to hedge against when the market opens. And it turns out when the market gets super choppy, everyone just turns up hundreds of thousands more cores and are running it overnight. And the beauty is in the morning they turn them off. They don't have to pay for any of those cores during the day. And then at night they spin them back up and basically rerun the numbers. And again, that ability to do that at will to adjust to exactly what you need really opens up new scenarios that you just couldn't actually take advantage of before. So we're kind of one of the three hyperscale cloud vendors, you could say, in the entire world. You know, the way we look to be different also then is in the other set of services that we provide. In particular, you know, one of the key things that differentiates us is what we call our hybrid support. And we're unique amongst the hyperscale cloud vendors in that we're the only ones that not only allow you to run code in our massive data centers, like the one you saw in the picture, but also allow you to basically run code inside your own data centers as well. And one of the things we hear from a lot of companies is for a variety of reasons. It might be you already have a data center that you're depreciating for the next 8 or 9 years, or you already have data, or you already have systems that are deployed. And if you could do it over again, you might do it all in the cloud, but the reality is it's going to take you a few years to get there. This gives you kind of a very unique way that you can actually start to take advantage of cloud-based technologies like Azure, even within your own facilities, use it within ours, and then bridge the two in seamless ways. And I think we're really the leader in that capability and really the only one that, you know, wants to give you kind of the flexibility to decide, run it in our data center, run it in yours, or run it in a partner's and have that full choice to do so. One of the things that we've talked a lot about with Azure is the fact that, you know, it's not just the Microsoft cloud. It's not just about running Windows Server workloads or SQL workloads or .NET workloads. It really is the cloud that enables you to run everything. We've got, you know, 5 or 6 different Linux distributions with full enterprise support. We've got dozens of database technologies, including things like Oracle and DB2 and SAP that you can run within our system as well. And we support every language and literally every operating system out there. And this basically gives you the ultimate choice and the ability to use the best of the Microsoft ecosystem, the best of the Linux ecosystem, and use the best tool for whatever job you want to do, and know that you can basically leverage it on top of that system and with all those data services in a rich way. We've always, historically at Microsoft, really focused on productivity, in particular for developers and IT professionals. And you know, one of the things that's made us unique is the fact that you don't always have to pay and hire the most expensive staff in order to get solutions done. And we've really tried to embrace that, again, with the cloud. And how do we enable you to use a rich set of tools, some of which we build, some of which are built by competitors or open source or other partners, and be able to integrate those likewise and really provide the most productive environment out there. We increasingly see more and more things moving to a SaaS-based model going forward, where in particular, I think for a lot of businesses, in particular, say even sales and marketing organizations, you know, rather than do the model of you ask IT to stand up a bunch of servers and deploy applications and feel that you're necessarily potentially have to run everything and hire your IT staff to do it. We see a lot of people say, hey, I'm going to use SaaS-based services in order to deliver those solutions so that I can actually control it. And if I don't find value from the solution, I can just cancel it at any month, and I don't have any legacy that I'm beholden to. And we see SaaS, and we see our Azure usage from ISVs building SaaS solutions really just exploding. And we want to make sure that Azure is both the best platform for people to build SaaS apps, but also the best platform so that when you buy a SaaS solution, you can easily extend it. And so whether you're buying Dynamics in CRM, or you're buying Salesforce, or Concur, or Workday, or any of the other popular SaaS solutions out there, you know, we've got a set of tools both in our data stack, as well as in our application development stack, as well as in our enterprise security and management stack, that make it really easy for you to basically integrate those into your environment, extend them, and customize them in all the different ways that you're going to need to. And do it in a way that is both complementary with your existing IT skills, and enables you to kind of extend those in a rich way, in a flexible way between departments. And then last but not least, the cloud needs to be trustworthy. Everything that we're doing in the cloud is really built on the foundation of trust. And we've worked very hard with Azure to make sure that we now have more compliance certifications than any other cloud vendor out there. And some of these are global ones. And some of these you can see here are very regional or country-specific ones. Our goal here is how do we provide the certifications necessary so that you can compete in any market, in any business, and sell to any geography, and basically have a cloud that runs everywhere and enables you to do that. In terms of where we're at, in terms of momentum, we now have about 90,000 customer subscriptions being created on Azure every single month. We got 1.5 million databases now being hosted in Azure, and we have over 500 million users now that are registered in our Azure Active Directory, which is our directory service in the cloud that enables sign-on and management across not only our applications, your applications, but also any third-party SaaS application. We're now processing more than 1.5 trillion messages per month from IoT devices like those pedometers in the cows. We do about 777 trillion storage transactions every single day across literally exabytes of data. From a usage perspective, we're seeing a whole bunch of enterprises, which I'll talk about in the next slide, but also over 40% of our revenue now comes from startups and ISVs. And so we're really seeing a wide collection of customers really embracing this cloud-based technology and building some really amazing solutions on top of it. These are just some of the enterprise customers using Azure. We got more than 80% of the Fortune 500 now taking advantage of the Microsoft Cloud. And you can see pretty much within any different industry, whether it's healthcare with GE Healthcare that are building healthcare solutions to reach hospitals and doctors and storing patient data, whether it's financial firms like MetLife or Towers Watson or Milliman that are doing providing financial services as well as financial calculations in the cloud, whether it's manufacturing companies like 3M or automobile companies like Toyota or Ford, retailers like Walmart, or new startups in the retail space like Jet.com and others. You know, there's really just a wide variety of different industries and some really amazing solutions being used as part of it. We really think this technology enables every company to transform their business and the combination of cloud and data can really change in a dramatic way both all your employees' lives, your customers' lives, and every aspect of what you do. And so, yeah, I'd love to say thank you again for coming this week. I can maybe do two quick questions, love to follow up and have any additional discussions you'd like. Question there.
EU customers, but it seems like German customers are really wanting servers in Germany. So my question is there one coming in Germany, or is there one already? And then congratulations on the Macquarie University, the takeaway from Google. You mentioned that earlier.
Cool.
Kudos.
Great. Well, a couple of questions there. I mean, one is around, I guess, Europe sovereignty in particular.
Yes.
I guess, is a whole question.
Yes.
In terms of, I sort of showed the heat map of all the different regions we have around the world. And we're basically building out lots of them in pretty much all the major geos. We started in Europe having two regions, one in Amsterdam, one in Ireland, or one in the Netherlands, one in Ireland. And you will see more regions soon in Europe in a number of different countries. Some of those are for data sovereignty reasons. And so there are some countries, Germany is probably one of the top around the world that I would say has unique data sovereignty concerns and sometimes regulations. And so that would be a good country, hypothetically, to add a data center or two. But similarly, a lot of countries that I think in the U.S. people don't hear about as much, Canada or Australia, also have very unique data sovereignty needs. And I think often as we fixate on Germany, but if you actually look around the world, I would say Canada, Australia, Brazil are in that same cluster of very high sensitivity to data sovereignty. And Canada, we're the only major cloud vendor now in Canada, as an example. We've got two regions in Australia, and we're also in Brazil. And so I think you'll see any particular geo that has non-trivial GDP, that has high data sovereignty needs, we'll look to extend in there. In terms of kind of specific regulations around Safe Harbor and others, send me mail. Happy to, it's probably more than a 30-second soundbite. I think we have a good story there, and I think we're probably unique amongst most of the cloud vendors in terms of the offerings we have there. But shoot me mail, and we can go into kind of more depth and make sure we kind of answer that in more depth. Great. Well, thanks again, and have a great week.